Disclaimer. The views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show. We'll have a gay old time. Hey everybody, welcome to Ancast. I'm Zach Birchie. Justin is here.
Hey everyone.
And our guest this week, somebody we've had a lot of requests to have on the show. You know who he is. Really, he needs not much of an introduction at all. One of the most prolific voice actors of the last, I would say, 10 years or so. You've heard him in Full Metal Alchemist, you've heard him in Dragon Ball, you've heard him in probably just about everything you've ever seen. And he's the lead in the next Pokemon movie. It's Vic Mignogna. Vic, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Hi, guys. Thank you so much for having me, Justin. Zach, it's a pleasure.
Thanks a lot. You know, these voice actor interviews, I can only imagine the thousands of them you have sat through. But this is your first time on our show, and so I'd like to get a little bit of of your backstory in terms of your earliest days. Having read your biography and everything, it's clear that you were a drama kid, you know, from the start. But your introduction specifically into anime and anime voice acting, tell us a little bit about that, how that got started, and your relationship with that material at the beginning.
Well, wow. As far as voice acting is concerned in general, I really kind of stumbled into it, you know. I'd been acting since I was very young, did a lot of theater and musical theater and some on-camera stuff, but never occurred to me to voice act, which is, I don't even know why it didn't occur to me, because I loved a lot of animated shows when I was young. In fact, I even loved a lot of anime. I just didn't know it was anime.
Right.
Speed Racer, Kimba the White Lion, stuff like that. And so about 13 or 14 years ago, I was in Houston, Texas, working on a production, and friend of mine said, that was working on the production with me, said, "Hey, you should go and audition for this place in town here. They buy these Japanimation. That's what he called it.
Right.
They buy these Japanese animated shows and they dub them into English and they're looking for actors." And I thought, wow, that sounds like fun. So I went and auditioned and I got cast in as Vega in Street Fighter II.
Right.
It was the first thing I did. And then, you know, they just kept getting more shows, and I kept getting the privilege to work on their next show and their next show and their next show. And then I met people from Funimation in Dallas, and then I met people at conventions from Los Angeles and New York. And I just, you know, it really blew me away to, you know, to see how these opportunities just kind of opened in front of me, and I just kind of haphazardly stepped in and did the best I could with them. But I never imagined that it would ever have developed into what it has today.
Now, that just to interrupt for a second, that first dub that you were a part of, that was the mythical ADV dub of Street Fighter 2V that was never released in the US, right?
Yes, that's exactly right.
It's
in the UK.
Yeah, that got a LA dub here.
You know what?
Strangest things.
I would love to get my hands on that. That would be some very nostalgic stuff right there.
Justin, don't you have that?
I think I do.
And Justin, I'm just curious, what's your home address?
Actually, I saw you around my neighborhood recently. We'll get to that later.
That was not me. That was not me parked outside your house.
Sure.
Well, but that begs the question. So, I mean, by anyone's standards in this industry, now you've seen a change with the rest of us. You've been around since before the boom, and now since after the boom. You were taping in ADV's studio way back in the day. What was that like? I mean, can you tell us a little bit about the environment back then, the atmosphere? Like, what was it like? I mean, I'm sure you were excited just to get the work.
Yeah, I was so ecstatic to be doing what I was doing, and it was never, ever, ever, ever about money or any kind of celebrity or fame, because nobody imagined that that would ever come from anime voice acting. And I can tell you something else that was really interesting was that they used to roll the videos off of tape. They used to have like 3/4 inch and beta tapes with the videos on them, and they would have to back time and pre-roll. It was really very, very different from how it's done now, all with QuickTime movies and, you know, all within Pro Tools and computer-based. It's much more efficient now. But it's really – you're exactly right. It was – back then, ADV was a very small little company, one or two rooms, a nice little tiny, well-equipped studio with a handful of people that loved anime and wanted to dub it into English and make it available to, you know, to the English-speaking fans. And none of us back then – I started recording – at ADV around the same time as people like Monica Rial and Chris Patton and, you know, some of those guys. And none of us ever imagined that it would grow into what it grew into and see it just kind of explode. And then, you know, the bottom kind of fell out of it in some ways. Some of the companies just got too big. They expanded too much and could not sustain it. And, you know, so now it's settled back down a little bit, but it's still very popular, much more mainstream than it was when I started. And I don't pretend to understand it, but I certainly am grateful to be a part of it.
Right. So you were living in the Houston area, and obviously you were getting work both at ADV and at Funimation at the time. I would assume you had to make that commute.
You know what's funny? I got to tell you too about that. I lived in Houston, and Funimation was in Dallas.
Right.
And I actually met some people from Funimation at an anime convention. I didn't even know what Funimation was. I didn't even know that anybody else was doing this besides ADV. And I met the people from some people from Funimation at a convention. And excuse me, they said, hey, you know, we're doing stuff up in Dallas. Do you want to come up and be a part of Dragon Ball Z? And don't hit me, but I said, what's Dragon Ball Z?
Right.
and they said, well, it's a very popular show, blah, blah, blah. And so I went up there and I played Broly in Dragon Ball Z. And then I started working more in Dallas and Houston. And I would literally fly up to Dallas. And I was actually the very, very first Houston actor to work at Funimation.
Hmm.
I was the very, very first voice actor. And then after I started going up there more, people like Tiffany Grant and Christine Auten and Monica Rial and Chris Patton and on and on and on started commuting up there and being a part of Funimation's productions.
For those of us not from Texas, how far is that? How long a flight is that?
Well, that's the funny thing. If you drive and everybody else drove, it's about 4.5 hours. But I can't stand driving any more than about an hour. So I would take a flight and it's about 35 or 40 minutes in the air to fly.
Right.
And you know, there are a lot of people that would say, Well, Vic, by the time you leave for the airport and get to the airport an hour ahead of time and then, you know, fly up there and then get off the plane and go down and get your luggage and, you know, and get to Funimation, it's about 4 hours. And I'm like, yeah, well, that's true, but at least the scenery changes. You know what I mean? I'm not stuck in a car for 4.5 hours. And so I always enjoyed flying up there. Of the hundreds of recording sessions I did at Funimation, I only drove up to Dallas one time. Hmm. And it was when I had gotten a new car. And my friends in Dallas wanted to see my new car, so I drove it up there so they could see it.
Huh. Right. Okay. So during that period, this is right before I feel like you had your break. I feel like you maybe weren't necessarily a known quantity, at least among anime fans and at anime conventions, until obviously Full Metal Alchemist. That was sort of your breakout role. But is that what you consider your breakout role? Do you have something else that you're like, well, this is when people actually started noticing me?
Well, that's a good question. I had actually done 30 or 40 anime series by the time Full Metal came along.
Right. Yeah.
But you're exactly right. I wasn't really that well known, and I hadn't done anything of any great notoriety. To be honest with you, I had done Broly and Dragon Ball Z, and I had gotten a lot more attention, fan attention at conventions and on the internet, from being involved with Dragon Ball Z as I ever did from the other 29 things that I had done.
Yeah, right.
Up to that point. But Full Metal was definitely a huge turning point for me. And I'll tell you, a funny thing happened right after I got cast in Full Metal. There was a hiatus of probably 2 or 3 months that had gone by before they had started recording. Okay? And during that time, the strangest thing happened. I started getting emails from fans saying, I heard that you got cast as Edward Elric in Full Metal Alchemist. You better not screw it up. I kid you not, guys. I had done all of these shows up to that point, and nobody had ever written me. I'd never gotten any kind of email, anything like that, especially before I even started recording the show. And so that was the first indication to me that Full Metal was a little bit different, had a little bit bigger fan base watching it than anything to that point. So, yeah, I kind of had the feeling that Full Metal was going to be a very different thing.
You know, as a result of that, maybe my perception of this is wrong, but I feel like my perception of you just as an actor and maybe as a person, it seems like that changed your life.
Yeah, I would say that's true. Hopefully for the better.
Positive, negative, I mean, how would you say it changed your life?
You know what? I love this question, Zach. I'll tell you the truth. It changed my life in that it gave me an opportunity to reach a lot more people.
Okay.
At my age, and my birthday was yesterday, and I came face to face once again with my age. And at my age, I want so desperately to make a positive impact on the people around me. I want so desperately to be a positive influence and a voice, you know, and a light and a voice for good in people's lives. And I get hundreds upon hundreds of emails every month from fans that are going through a lot of difficult times and struggles and loss and tragedy and questions and confusion. And they write me to ask me what I think they should do or how I think they should handle certain things. And, you know, if I were 25 years old and I had the kind of attention that I've gotten now and I were only 25 years old, I would probably not even reply to them, or I would write them back and go, what are you asking me for? You know what I mean? That's, you know, none of my business. But at my age, I really, really, really cherish and value the opportunity and the privilege to hopefully speak words of encouragement and positive influence into people's lives. And I would have to say that Full Metal exponentially increased my opportunity to do that. And for that, I am extremely grateful.
Wow. Okay. So, well, first of all, happy birthday. I had no idea. but that's a really, it's a good answer to that question. But in terms of Full Metal, so that had its lifespan, and it expanded a lot by running on Adult Swim, which it did over and over and over and over and over again, as I'm sure you know. And that show had a life unlike any other, really, in the U.S. for a very long time. And what I was curious to get your take on the second series, Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood. When that came around, I would imagine you were pretty stoked. You were, I would imagine.
Oh my gosh, yes. I mean, when, you know, we all, everybody involved in Full Metal absolutely loved it.
Right.
I mean, I absolutely adored Full Metal. And when it ended, it was very sad because, you know, the first series didn't have much of an ending. It kind of left a lot of questions unanswered. But, you know, that was it. And so we finished and we did the movie, Conqueror of Shambhala. We did the OVAs. And that was it.
Right.
And so when I heard that they were making more Full Metal, the first thing that came to my mind was, oh, no. What if it's not any good? You know what I mean? What if they're just trying to capitalize on the popularity of the first one? And it's lame. I mean, you know, all three of us have seen plenty of sequels to movies and TV shows that were just pure garbage,
right,
because they were just trying to make a buck on something that was popular the first time. So I was really kind of worried about that. And then I heard that it was going to be based on the manga, which I had been told by fans all along was amazing. So that gave me a little more confidence in the quality of the show. But then I started thinking, oh no, what if I don't do as good a job? What if I don't sound like Ed anymore? What if we're just not able to do as good a job this time? You know, it's like when you're playing Little League baseball with your friends and you go up to bat and you hit a home run. Every time you come up to bat, what is everybody expecting you to do? You know, hit another home run.
Right.
And so, you know, there was a great deal of anxiety about whether or not we would be able to do that with the second series. And so you can imagine how gratified we all were when the second series turned out very well. And in fact, a lot of people tend to like Brotherhood even better than the original.
That's true. At least I've noticed that. However, I'm sure maybe you're familiar with this. A lot more people, and Justin, you agree with on this one too. A lot of people cite that first series as their favorite anime. That first one really touched a lot of people. It seems to have touched a lot more people than the second one did.
Well, and you know what? I would count myself as one of them.
Right.
I mean, when people ask me which series do you like better, the first or the second, my generic answer is I don't even look at them as two separate series. As the guy playing Ed, I look at it as one big giant Full Metal adventure, you know? When we did Brotherhood, I was really jazzed to see Ed meet new people, go to new places, have new adventures. To me, it was like, you know, it was an extension of the original. So I kind of roll it all into one big experience for me.
Right.
But having said that, you know, there will always be a very, very special place in my heart for the original series.
Right. Okay. So what after that, has there been anything that's really sort of grabbed you, has been like, you know, this is the one that's really means something to me?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, you know what? You might be surprised to know that while it is true that Ed probably gets the Full Metal gets the majority of the attention at conventions, you might be surprised to know that Oron High School Host Club,
right, yeah,
is a very close second place.
Among your demographic?
I'm not surprised.
And I got to be honest with you guys. After Full Metal, I did Tsubasa Chronicle and then Bleach and Naruto. and Vampire Knight and Kakaishi and a lot of great shows, and Ouran High School Host Club. And I really, really, really loved Ouran. I even before Funimation licensed Ouran, I had heard about Ouran and I wanted so desperately to be a part of it. So I have to tell you that, you know, while Ed is my favorite character because I played him for an awful long time and he's a great, great character, Tamaki from Ouran, I probably had as much fun and cherished recording Tamaki as much, if not more, than any other role.
Right. And it also totally, you know, Justin mentioned your demographic. And that's definitely in line with their taste, I would say. And that sort of leads me into my next line of questioning here is, you go to a ton of conventions.
Yep.
I feel like there's something in my inbox every week. Some convention is announcing that you are a guest. So tell us a little bit about that lifestyle. Because how many conventions do you do a year? And, yeah, what's that lifestyle like?
Well, first of all, I probably do on average of between 20 and 25 events a year.
So about half the year you're traveling on the weekends.
Roughly. I mean, that would be an average. Sometimes less, sometimes more. And I got to tell you, I love doing event appearances.
Well, I mean, obviously.
Well, but you know what's funny? You say that, and yet there are people out there, desperate for attention, I assume, who write things on the internet like, Vic Mignogna hates his fans. Vic Mignogna is mean to the fans. And I think to myself, how could anyone who's ever been within 10 feet of me think that I hate the fans? And why would I do all of these events and spend multiplied hours hugging kids, taking pictures with them, signing things for them, if I hated them so much? And why would a convention invite me to be a guest if I hated the fans so much? I mean, it's absurd that people would even suggest that that's true. But nothing could be further from the truth. If you think about going to a convention, I get to see the world. I get to see different cities and countries, and the conventions, you know, cover the costs for me to come. I get to earn, you know, I get to pay my bills. You know, I get to earn money to pay my bills.
Right.
And I get to promote my work. I get to meet the fans. It's just a win-win-win-win-win-win.
It has to be a little bit exhausting, though. I mean,
it is very, it's very exhausting.
I mean, I think Zach and I went to like 4 conventions this year, and we're no more.
Yeah, we're burnt.
Yeah, well, yeah, we're burnt. Yeah. I mean, it is. I will give you that, Justin. It's very exhausting, but it's a good exhaustion. Do you remember what I told you was what I loved most about what I do and the opportunities that it has afforded me to make a difference in people's lives?
Minutes ago, yes.
If that is true, and it is, then my exhaustion at the end of a day is a really good exhaustion. It's an exhaustion like you'd feel after you work out, and you know you did something good for yourself, or you know you did something good for somebody else. And so, I mean, my fiance Michelle will tell you that, you know, as soon as I finish a long day at a convention and I was supposed to sign autographs for an hour and I signed them for 4 hours because that's how many people lined up, I'll go back to my hotel room and I will collapse. And I will call her and say, I'm just going to sit quietly in the dark for the next half an hour or 40 minutes and just decompress for a minute, because it is very exhausting. And travel, you know, air travel, packing. I mean, like I got back from the Fan Expo in Toronto on Monday, day before yesterday, and I leave tomorrow for Dragon Con. And in those 2 days that I was home, yesterday was my birthday, and I spent all day recording two shows. And, you know, and then today, I've been working on a script for our Star Trek production. I've got a couple of private recording projects I need to do this evening, and still pack and leave tomorrow. So, yeah, it is very exhausting, but I wouldn't trade it for anything in the world. It's a good kind of exhaustion.
Do you ever look at the line? Because, you know, I've walked past your autograph line on occasion. You know, I'm on my way to my next thing, and I'll walk past the autograph area. And there's a gigantic line for you. And I have to admit, I always say to myself, this guy shows up to, like, half the conventions in the country. How is this line so huge? I mean, have you ever, like, thought to yourself, you know, I go to a lot of these things. Why is this line so big?
Well, you know what? I have a couple of answers for that.
Okay, then.
The first answer is, I don't pretend to understand it, but I sure appreciate it.
Sure, of course, yes.
I am humbled and honored by it. And you know what? I go to conventions. I go to several conventions every year, like they keep inviting me back, like the Fan Expo. Let's take the Fan Expo in Toronto this last weekend. I have been there as a guest every year for the past 6 years. And every year that I go, I think to myself, nobody's going to show up for my autograph session.
Come on now.
No. I'm being honest. Every year that I go, I think to myself, this is the year that people are tired of me. This is the year that they're like, oh, let's go see somebody else. We've seen Vic. We've met Vic. Oh, let's go to so-and-so's Q&A instead of Vic's. We've been to Vic's Q&A. I swear to God, you guys, I fully expect at the conventions that I go to regularly, like AWA in Atlanta. I'm a regular there. I've kind of become family there. And I love going to that event, or ACON in Dallas, or the Fan Expo in Toronto. I get invited to these events almost every year. And every time I go, I get ready to walk into an autograph session or a panel room, and I think, okay, Vic, don't be surprised if there are only 25 people in the room, because it's going to happen sooner or later. People are going to get tired of you. It's going to happen. So I try to prepare myself for it. And I'll be honest with you guys, I am so grateful and blown away and humbled every time I walk into the room or walk into an autograph session, and the lines are long. The lines in Toronto this year were longer than they've ever been. And I don't pretend to understand it, but I am sure grateful. That's my first answer. My second answer is, I honestly think that the majority of the fans know how much I appreciate them. I think I express and communicate very clearly how grateful I am to the fans for their kindness and support of my work. And while a lot of the other guests are sitting behind a table and signing autographs, I am standing, not sitting, and with almost every fan, I come around the edge of the table and give them a hug and take a picture. I think that really means something to them. I think it communicates to them how much I genuinely care about them and appreciate them and their support. And I think that may be one of the reasons, in addition to others, why those lines are the length that they are.
Right. Okay. Well, I mean, that stands to reason, I guess. So bringing it back a little bit to what you were talking about before with reaching out to people and you know, generating a larger audience for yourself and being able to reach out to people. I wanted to talk about your faith, because one of the things that I think is unique, actually, I think I could say this objectively, you are the only voice actor that has a major presence at anime conventions and in the industry that is as outwardly and outspokenly, I don't want to use this word lightly, but I would describe you as a fundamentalist Christian.
And how would you define a fundamentalist Christian?
Well, you went to... Well, okay, so looking at your... Yeah, that's a good question, Vic. Thanks. your bio describes you as having grown up very entrenched in Christianity, and then you went to Bob Jones University and then Liberty University, which those are Christian schools. Hardcore Christian schools, I would say. Fundamentalist Christian schools. And your faith is in pretty much every... Like, your web presence has Bible quotes all over it. And you actually run Christian services on Sundays at conventions. You are the only voice actor I've ever seen do anything like this. That's very unique. And I'm curious, you know, what you were talking about earlier, like reaching out to young fans and everything. Is that part of it? Do you feel like you're able to reach out to these people more? You're able to reach a broader audience because you clearly have an evangelist message. It's very, you know, I'm bringing the good news about Jesus to, you know, these people.
Well, let me ask you this, Zach.
Go ahead.
If I believe that God's love for people is good news,
sure,
I would be a monster to keep it to myself, wouldn't I?
Yeah, no, man, I'm not. I'm not getting on you for it. No.
I'm kind of articulating my feeling about this.
Sure.
Because, dude, I get emails, not very many, mind you, but I've gotten emails from people that are like, "Why do you jam your religion down people's throats?" Blah blah blah. And I'm like, I write them back, and I'm like, first of all, I don't jam anything down anybody's throats. I am as loving and embracing and welcoming of everyone as anyone you know. I condemn no one. And any panels that I hold about faith are completely voluntary to attend. If people don't want to go, they don't have to go. There's nothing jamming down anybody's throats. I don't try to force people to join churches. I don't try to force people to pray prayers. I don't try to force people to make some kind of a profession of faith. I don't try to force them to drink chicken blood.
All of these things would be illegal, but
well, you know what I mean. Being heavily influencing or pushing my beliefs down anybody's throat. I don't do that. I share my experience. I share what I believe is good news for everyone. It's not a message of condemnation or judgment. It's a message of love and forgiveness and acceptance. And I think that's good news, and I think I would be remiss not to share it.
Right.
It may interest you guys to know that there are other voice actors who are Christians. They just don't – they're just not quite as outspoken about it as I am. And I am as outspoken as I am because I feel, as I said, that it's good news. And if I truly care about these people that I meet when I go to conventions, I would be extremely remiss not to share with them the gift of God's love for them. Let them know that no matter what difficult times they may be having or what kind of harsh treatment they've been dealt by quote-unquote religious people in the past, the simple truth is God is madly in love with them and wants a relationship with them. It has nothing to do with Baptist, Catholic, Protestant, Methodist, Episcopalian, you name it. It has nothing to do with any of that. It has to do with a simple relationship. And I feel very strongly about sharing that. And the conventions that allow me to do so, I'm very grateful for. And the conventions that don't feel like it's appropriate, I don't push the issue. But I think it's good news. I think it's a good thing, and that's why. And I think it's a message that a lot of people need to hear.
Right.
I mean, you guys have been to anime conventions.
Yeah.
all you need to do is stand in the middle of the room and look around a little bit.
Well,
or keep your ears open, and you find out that there are people that are lonely, they're outcasts, they're alienated 363 days of the year. They're made fun of, they're ostracized, they're put down, they're bullied, and I want these kids to know that they are special, that they are unique, that they are precious, and that God is madly in love with them and wants a relationship with them. So I do what I can to share that message in the industry that I have been put in the position that I've been given. I honestly believe that God has put me in the place that I'm in, not to make much of Vic Mignogna, but to make much of God and his love for these kids.
So I'm going to ask this question, and it's going to sound shitty. It's going to sound like I'm maybe it's going it, to maybe it'll, it, I would bet you've probably gotten this question before, and maybe it'll sound a little mocking. I don't mean it that way. I want you to know I don't mean it that way. But do you see yourself as kind of a when you go to an anime convention and you're telling us you know, you're hearing these kids around you, and you see them as being sort of lonely, and they're outcasts, and all that stuff. Do you see them as are you sort of a shepherd figure? Like, do you see yourself pulling them in and saying, like, hey, you don't know about God's love, and that's why you're lonely and weird? Go ahead.
Let me tell you something.
Okay.
I could show you 1,000 emails.
I'm sure you could.
And I didn't write them.
Yeah, I know.
Well, no, I'm answering your question.
Yeah, go ahead.
I could show you binders full of emails from people exactly like you just described, who I have been able to be some kind of positive encouragement to, some kind of love and acceptance in their lives when they don't have very much elsewhere. And you know what, my friend? If I'm able to do that, that is the greatest thing I could ever give the anime world. Far beyond any amount of money, far beyond any amount of celebrity.
Right.
If I am able to say or encourage someone at just the right time in their life, when they are going through a difficult time and perhaps they're at a crossroads, and the choice that they're about to make could dramatically impact the direction of their life, their family, their children, forever. If I'm able to be of some sort of positive influence or encouragement to someone at that moment in their lives, that is priceless to me. There is no amount of money, no price tag you could put on that privilege.
Right. So for you, do you see giving these people this message, do you think that's what ultimately that's missing in their lives? Do you see these people as like, well, they're missing this and that's what they don't have?
Well, no, I think they're, you know what, Zach, if we were all honest, and I mean, even you, bro, if you and Justin and I and everyone listening were honest, we all have a lot of insecurities and fears and questions about ourselves, who we are, do we matter, what is our place in the world, what's the purpose of this all? If I'm able to do that, I consider it a privilege and an honor. And I think that if everyone were honest, you guys included, you know, we all have questions and fears and hurts and insecurities and loneliness and questions about our own, you know, self-esteem and self-worth, and some more than others. Not everybody, but some more than others. And it's those people that I hope to make a positive difference in their lives.
Sure. Right.
Now, listen, let me say this too. I'm not implying that, oh, I'm here to save everyone. I mean, don't get me wrong here.
Okay.
That is not the deal. I just believe, and I have 1,000 emails to prove it, that there are a lot of people out there that feel very unloved. They feel worthless. They feel foolish. They feel lonely, intimidated, bullied. And they need to know that when people let them down, when all the human beings with all of our faults and frailties, all the human beings in their lives let them down and fail them, God loves them. The God that created them loves them. They are special to him. And that's a very important message that I think everyone needs to know. And if I'm able to spread that message to anybody that is interested in listening, I am happy to do so.
Right. And I wanted to point out, I'd never seen that happen before. Like, basically someone holding a church service on a Sunday at a convention. I've never seen that before.
Right.
And I saw it in the program guide, and I was like, well, I would imagine that there are plenty of people here who want that. You know, you are providing a service. Like, I would imagine plenty of people want a place where they can go and do their usual Sunday worship without having to leave the show floor. I would imagine that's providing a service, I would imagine.
Well, that is a portion of the people that attend.
Right.
And then there are also a portion of people that attend because they've been very disenfranchised and disillusioned by people in their lives who called themselves religious, and they condemned these kids. People in their lives who told them that God was going to send them to hell for watching anime because it was from the devil. People who told them that God hated the fact that they colored their hair purple. God hated the fact that they wore black. God hates the fact that they pierced their body. They deal with those kind of things on a daily basis, and they come to a convention for one weekend, and they want so much to believe that God is more loving and more compassionate than that. But the people in their lives that call themselves Christians tell them of a God very different than that. And so they come to a church service panel that they see in the program because they want so desperately to believe that God is not the vindictive, judgmental, hateful, condemning God that the people in their lives tell them he is. And so that is a very important message. Those are some of the people that come as well. And you know what's funny to me, guys? Conventions are all about options, right? I mean, conventions want to create a schedule that has a lot of options. And conventions are always looking for something interesting to include in their programming. I mean, you're going to have a hentai panel. So why not offer, you know, a panel about faith? You don't have to come.
Well, specifically, you won't at the faith panel. Get it? That's a joke. Anyway.
What do you mean? What do you mean?
You can't say you don't have to come while mentioning hentai.
Sorry, it's a joke.
You guys.
All right. Anyway, but here's the thing. Here's what I really wanted to ask. You're right. I agree with you. I don't think there's anything wrong with having. Like I said, I saw your panel. I've seen your panels over the years, and I always looked at it and said, well, that's nice that somebody is providing some kind of a service for people who are very religious, because you work in a very secular industry, I'm sure you know.
Of course.
It's extremely secular, which is why we're asking about this.
But you know what? That's the whole point, guys.
Right.
I mean, okay, let me say something else about this. Christianity is not a hobby, and anyone who thinks it is doesn't understand it.
Okay.
Christianity is not like collecting stamps. If you are a Christian, it should impact everything in your life. If you really say, you know what, I want to live my life in a way that honors God. I'm going to screw up. Sure. I'm not perfect. I'm not any better than anybody else. Are you guys listening to me? I am not any better than anybody else, and I have never claimed to be, and I never will. I am no better than anyone else. but I love God, and I want to live my life in a way that pleases him.
Right.
And if I truly mean that, if I truly believe what I say I believe, it's going to impact every decision of my life.
Sure.
It's not a hobby. It's going to impact where I go, how I talk, who I date, who I marry, the kind of work I do, the way I conduct my business, the way I raise my children. So how could it not find its way into the industry that I work in?
Yeah, and you're a singular voice, you know.
Well, and it's funny that you should say that, because I'm not as singular as you might think. Caitlin Glass she holds services at conventions that she goes to. In fact, she and I held the very first one that was ever held at YomaCon in Detroit years ago. Johnny Young Bosch is a Christian.
Well, I'm not. Hang on. I don't want to give you the impression that I'm saying you're the only Christian voice actor. That's not what I meant. What I meant to say is you're the most visible and outspoken one. And you.
Oh, okay.
That's
understand.
That's what I meant by that.
I misunderstood then. I thought you were kind of implying that, you know,
oh, no.
You're the only one out there. You're the one out there doing these fanatical church services.
Oh, no. Well, I didn't say fanatical ever. I know.
I believe the word was fundamentalist.
Well, sure, but I don't know if that's. I apologize if you felt like that was an inaccurate description
of
your faith.
No,
let me
respond to that. I think people that use that word use it in a derogatory sense.
Well, I never meant that. I was just using it as a descriptor.
The word I would use is non-denominational.
Okay, sure.
I do not affiliate with Baptist, Catholic, any particular denomination.
Right.
I simply believe what I believe, and I believe that it applies to – that God's love and desire for relationship applies to everyone on the planet with no exceptions.
Right. I was just working off the sort of typical definition of evangelical, which means you're proselytizing, basically. I know what you mean, like people use those words in a derogatory fashion. It's just a descriptor. I didn't mean it as...
No, that's fine. I just know that the word fundamentalist is used by a lot of people in a, you know, in a negative connotation.
You're absolutely right. And actually that brings me to my question I really wanted to ask you about, which was whether or not you personally had ever encountered any discrimination in the anime industry because of your outspoken Christianity.
All the time.
Really? All the time? Tell us about that.
All the time. I cannot really understand why people would be so, threatened by someone who merely shares kindness, love, compassion, good news, not somebody who's getting people to prick their fingers and sign something in blood, not somebody who's trying to get someone to swear an allegiance to Satan, not somebody who's trying to get people to write their name on a church roster, not somebody who's trying to get people to give money, purely sharing a message of love and forgiveness and compassion. And yet there are some people out there, not a ton, but there are a vocal minority of people out there who are, for whatever reason, extremely threatened by somebody who shares the things that I share. And you know what they do? They make up lies about me. They make up hateful, hurtful, vicious rumors to try to ruin my reputation, to try to cause me trouble, to try to undermine what I'm trying to do. And that's very unfortunate. It's very, very sad that people, you know, would feel such a necessity to try to shut somebody down who's merely trying to share good things with people.
Well, when you say you face discrimination, what do you, can we get like, you don't have to name names, obviously, but what kind of discrimination have you faced? Like,
okay,
what have
okay.
you run? What have you come up against?
Okay, here I'll give you some examples. There are websites online you could go to right now. Vic Mignogna haters. Now, they don't hate my voice acting. You know what I mean?
Is that really a thing?
Yeah, it's really a thing.
Wow.
There are websites that kids have made. Again, we're not talking about the majority. The vast, vast majority, no problem. But there are a few, and unfortunately, they are very vocal. And they literally make, you know, Facebook pages, and they get on websites like 4chan and whatever, Crunchyroll and different places, and they do nothing but spew slander and hatred and lies about me because they just can't stand, you know, the fact that I take some kind of stand for my faith. That's one example. The websites that people make.
Sure.
There are some voice actors, people in the industry who, for whatever reason, maybe their choices and their lifestyle or wherever they are in their lives, they feel like it's necessary to try to undermine me. They make fun of me at panels and conventions, and they actually actively seek to try to keep me from being invited to conventions. There are voice actors in the industry who actively seek to keep me, even though I'm one of the most requested guests at different conventions. They do everything they can to keep me from being invited as a guest because they don't like my faith and the stand that I take on my faith. In other words, they completely discount and ignore all of the kids that actually pay the bills, you know what I mean? All of the attendees who actually pay to put the convention on because they personally are offended or threatened or don't like the fact that I take some kind of a stand.
Sorry to interrupt you here. I just wanted to say, so you're saying that there are voice actors out there who specifically try and get conventions to disinvite or not invite you because you're an outspoken Christian.
Absolutely correct. Unequivocally correct.
Wow. Okay.
I'm not going to name their names,
sure,
but there are absolutely, without question, I know it for a fact, a documented fact.
Well,
now, you know what's really sad about that, you guys? That's the most childish, unprofessional thing I've ever seen in my life. You don't behave like that when you're a professional. For instance, exactly. Thank you, Justin.
Yeah.
Exactly. You know what? There are plenty of things that I do not see eye to eye on with people in my life, but I would never in a million years step on stage in front of fans at a convention and talk crap about other people in my industry. That is childish, adolescent, but it happens because there are people in this industry, you know, who do that. And I don't do it. I mean, you know, there are 25 video cameras rolling at every panel I do. And you will never find 1 minute where I have ever spoken negatively, insultingly, or disparagingly about any other voice actor or anyone in the industry for that matter, because it's not professional. It's not adult.
That's it's just a little shocking to me that you know, in my experience, really, you know, you run the Sunday services, you know, fine. So I've seen a few video clips where I was like, hey, why is he talking that way to somebody who just is of a different faith or whatever?
What are you talking about?
Well, there was one clip that kind of went around where somebody presented themselves as a Buddhist. And you were a little, at least in, you know, the clip that I saw, you seemed like you were a little dismissive, maybe, of his
faith. Tell me how. I have no recollection of that.
Well, it's been a long time, but, you know.
You know what, Zach? I would like to ask you,
okay,
as my friend,
uh-huh,
find the clip
I will do
and
it.
Send me the link.
I'll do it. I don't want to bring it. You're right. I don't want to bring up anything, you know, where it's just like vague. I remember this, you know, whatever. You're absolutely right.
Well, no, because I want you to know something. I get questions from people all the time. And to be quite honest with you, people, I'm sure, some of whom are trying to trap me and get me to say or do something incriminating.
Okay.
But I have never, ever, ever condemned or condescended to people who don't believe what I believe.
People of another faith, sure.
And I would really, really love to see the clip you're talking about because,
well, it's a vague thing, and it's one of those things where I saw it and was like, well, it just brought up a few question marks. It wasn't like this guy's hateful or anything. Of course not, but.
Okay, well, I would really appreciate it if you'd find it and send it to me.
I will try my best.
Let me explain why this touches a nerve with me, Zach.
Okay, go ahead.
I get emails from kids that say, I heard that somebody told you they were a Wiccan and you yelled at them and threw a Sharpie in their face and refused to sign their autograph.
Well, that's just silly.
I heard that somebody told you that they were Jewish and you cussed them out and told them that they were going to hell. I heard.
Right, okay.
So none of these things are even close to being true.
Sure, of course not.
So when I hear this, I'm like, really? There is a video of me somehow being dismissive or condescending or condemning in some way of somebody of a different faith? I'd like to see it because I don't recall ever being that way to anybody. I go out of my way to be very careful not to do that.
Right. This was years and years ago. All I remember is like, well, it seemed a little mildly dismissive. But
you know what's funny? Can I say something that's funny?
Sure.
You still with me, Justin?
Yeah, I'm right. I loathe to interrupt.
Oh, no, that's fine. I just want to make sure I didn't lose you guys. I find this very interesting. There are voice actors that go to conventions and they preach whatever their message is. They yell it from the rooftops. They blare their political beliefs. They blare their sexual beliefs. They yell them. They wear their T-shirts. They bring them up anytime and every time they can. And yet nobody seems to be bothered by that. And yet I go to conventions and I have a Sunday morning panel that you can choose not to attend, and suddenly I'm some sort of a fanatic, some sort of a crazy Jesus freak, you know, who's jamming his religion down people's throats. Do you guys, please tell me you see the hypocrisy in that?
I guess you don't.
Well, I'm struggling to figure out I'm trying to figure out what you mean by those other messages. Could you give us some examples? I'm like, maybe I'm just not connecting the pieces here.
I'm trying not to be specific.
Oh, okay.
Sure, I understand. But
okay, let me say it this way. People talk about the things they feel strongly about.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Anyone and everyone talks about the things they feel strongly about. Do you agree with that statement?
Sure. Things like anti-piracy or, you know, other causes.
Right. Or any of a number of causes. Any of a number of causes.
Well, hang on a second. Now, you said there's sexual beliefs.
Moral positions, political positions, ethical positions. But the point is, they use their panels and opportunities to promote their beliefs, correct? correct?
To an extent, I would say you're right, I guess. I
don't even know how, I mean, is this really a question?
Yeah, I think it kind of is, Vic.
Really?
I'm not trying to be a shit here. I'm just saying, like, I don't think I've been to a lot of voice actor panels where they were quite as outspoken about one particular thing or another.
Do you attend a lot of voice actors' Q&As?
Well, I always send people to them, and yes, I edit a lot of those reports, and yeah, I've been in this for like 15 years. I've been doing this a long time, so...
Okay. Well, yeah. I know from personal experience that there are people in this industry and every industry.
Right.
My point is, you know what? It's much simpler. We're making too big a deal out of this.
Sure, okay.
My simple point is, when you have a passion about something, you talk about it.
Right.
When you feel strongly about something, you share it.
Absolutely.
I am not alone in that.
No, you're not.
There are plenty of people in our industry who get up in front of panels and they talk about the things that they're passionate about. They talk about the things that are important to them. And I am no different.
And I don't think anyone would really argue with that. With that particular description of this, I think no one would have a case against you on that one.
That's all I'm trying to say.
Sure.
It is not, my point is that it is not so terribly unusual or out of the ordinary that I share what I have a passion for, because plenty of people do that.
Right. Okay.
Does that make more sense?
Yes, it does. But I know we have limited time with you here, and I did want to get to the questions we had for you from some of your fans on Twitter, if you have some time for us.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. Okay. Go ahead. I didn't mean to take as much time as I did. But
it was a fascinating conversation. I'm really
deep stuff.
Glad we got to get into it with you. okay. So... Let's see here. PGRMRGP from Twitter asks, which of your roles do you feel best paint your range as an actor?
What an awesome question. You know what? I just played a character for a Funimation show called Level E. And it is absolutely the definition of range.
Right.
It's
a good show.
The director gave me one direction at the beginning of the show, and his direction was, you can do anything you want. You're welcome to do anything that comes to your mind, Vic, no matter what the voice is, no matter what the personality, the characteristic. This character that you're playing, Prince Baka, is from another planet. He is acclimating in with pop culture on Earth, very much like Mork from Mork and Mindy. And anything that comes to your mind, you can do it. And I didn't really believe him at first, but I was like, okay. And so I had so much fun playing this role. And there were absolutely – it was like Outback Steakhouse. It was like no rules, just right. I mean, anything that I could think to do – whether it was the Emperor from Star Wars or Krusty the Clown or Captain Kirk or Yoda or a little girl or a deep, you know, evil, demonic guy. I mean, it didn't matter. Anything I could think of, the director would let me do. And I loved him for that, and I had so much fun doing it.
Okay. All right. Redneck Otaku asks... weirdest convention story you have?
Well, Redneck, one of the things about doing a lot of conventions is that you end up having a lot of weird stories. There tends to be not just one weird story, but there are several, a lot. But I will say this: I've never had a bad experience.
Really? Never?
Like, yeah, and never. You know what? You guys may find that interesting, but it's absolutely the truth.
I've had bad experiences, and I do like an 18th of the number of shows you do.
I know. I swear I'm being honest with you. I have never had a markedly, definitively negative fan interaction or moment at a convention. I will tell you this. I'll tell you one story. Years and years and years ago, I was at MetroCon in Tampa, Florida. And oh my goodness. And I mean, we're talking probably 10 years ago at least. And I was there with several other industry guests. And they were having an anime idol contest where kids were competing, you know, or fans were singing or dancing or acting or doing, you know, performing. So it was an American Idol kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. And the con chair came to us ahead of time and he said, "We want to run this like the Gong Show." He said, "We've got a gong that's going to sit on the table in front of you judges. And we want you to feel free to grab the mallet and hit the gong if somebody's like really bad." And I said to the con chair, "That's a really bad idea. I don't think these fans are prepared to be gonged. You know what I mean? That's really kind of a harsh thing to do in front of people.
Especially like a lot of them are teenagers." And
yeah, exactly. That just seems really mean-spirited.
Thank you, Justin. Exactly. So I even said, I don't think that's a great idea. And he said, "Oh, no, no. It's okay because we let all of the contestants know ahead of time that it might happen. So they're all good with it. They all understand that it might happen, and they're all cool. But we think it'll be really fun." And I was like, "Well, okay." So there were like four or five of us sitting at the judges' table, right? This one little girl comes out, teenage girl, and she's singing a song. And it's not the greatest performance you've ever seen.
A little pitchy.
Yeah. Very pitchy. And she was very nervous and, you know, she was very shy. And one of the guys at the table was not a voice actor. He was actually an ADR director for ADV at the time. And he was a guest there. And he looks down the table at me and he gestures for me to pick up the mallet and hit the gong. And I looked at him and I nodded, "No, no way. No, I'm not doing it." So he gestures for me to give him the mallet. So I toss the mallet down to him and he hits the gong. I cannot describe this little girl's face. She stopped singing and her eyes got really big and her jaw dropped open as if to say, "I can't believe you did that to me in front of all these people." And she literally, I kid you not, fell to her knees on stage and started crying.
So you're saying Greg Ayers is a monster?
No, Greg Ayers is not an ADR director.
Okay, Chris Ayers is a monster.
This was not, no, it was not Chris. It was not Chris nor Greg. But anyway, yeah, so that was a very weird, awkward, sad experience many, many years ago and from that time on, you guys, when conventions ask me if I'll judge their cosplay contest or if I'll judge their anime idol contest, I'll say, "You know what? If it's all the same to you, I'd really rather not be put in the position of judging anybody. I really don't think it's a good position to put your guests in to have to pick winners and losers."
Right. And apparently the cosplayers appreciate that.
I'm sure. Well, I would expect.
You know, they want other people who cosplay judging their costumes. That's what they want.
Probably, know? Yeah. So I don't do any judging anymore because of that experience.
All right, moving on. Ben the Bear asks, "Do you voice characters that had a female voice actor or voice actress in Japanese any differently than you voice characters that had a male voice actor?" in Japanese?
Wow, what a great question. Well, I mean, of course, Edward Elric was voiced by a girl in Japanese.
Right.
But interestingly enough, when the Japanese cast me, and then I heard Romy Park, I heard her version of Ed, I thought to myself, well, I can't sound like her. I mean, I can't do that. And the directors said, oh, it's okay. I mean, they cast you because they chose you because they wanted the English version of Edward Elric to be a little more masculine. So the goal is not to imitate her. You know, just make it your own. Just do what you did in the audition. And so, no, I don't voice them any differently. I voice them as authentically and believably as I can.
All right. MD Gandhi asks, what do you consider to be your worst voiceover performance?
Wow, what a great you have a lot of good questions tonight, Zach.
Hey, these are all from the fans. I can't take credit for many of them.
We have great listeners.
All of the questions that I've gotten over the years at conventions and all kinds of interviews, some of these I've never gotten before.
Well, we don't ask you how to be a voice actor.
Which is the worst one I've ever done? Probably some of the early stuff, you know. If I had to be honest, probably, you know, probably Vega. In fact, maybe one of the reasons that I'd love to see it is because it was probably unbearable to me. You know what I mean? It was probably, if I were to see it, I'd be like, oh my gosh, how did I ever get a second show? I would guess maybe the early stuff would be the stuff that I would think would probably be the weakest.
Okay. All right. Sorry, I just blown through these. So BrackusJS asks, are there roles for people who are characters who are evil, such as Mitsuhide in Sengoku Basara, or a little lecherous, like Kensei in Kenichi, the Mightiest Fighter, are those more fun to play than, say, Edward Elric?
What a great question. You know, bad guys are often a little more fun to play because, I mean, let's face it, most of us are not bad guys. You know, like, I'm not a pervert, so it's kind of fun to play a pervert in a show. Or I'm not, you know what I mean? I'm not a homicidal maniac, so it's kind of fun to play a homicidal maniac. You know what I mean? But that's kind of the fun of acting, is that you get to play characters that are not you, characters that are not indicative of you. You know, and that's part of the challenge and the fun of being an actor. So, yeah, that's a great question. And, yeah, I do enjoy playing bad guys occasionally for just that reason. And if they're written well, bad guys are often more interesting because, you know, they have a more interesting backstory. Something happened to them that turned them bad, you know what I mean?
Right.
So they have a little bit more of a complex backstory. You guys, it's going on 9:30 here.
Sure.
And I certainly didn't mean to keep you as long as I did.
Yeah, no problem. We've got if you've got time for two more Twitter questions, I'd love to get these out. We got a lot of
sure,
them.
Go ahead.
We didn't
go
even
ahead.
Get through part of them. But let me just ask this one, and I do want to ask about this because you are heavily involved in directing and acting in that Star Trek series, Star Trek Continues.
Yeah.
And this ties into what we were talking about earlier. Vinny Av AGC asks, how do you feel working on Star Trek, which has an intensely secular humanist message? As a devout Christian,
I love Star Trek.
Right.
I love Star Trek for 100 different reasons, and I am having a great deal of fun being a part of recreating and continuing the original series. And you know what? You don't have to agree with every single thing about every single thing in order to enjoy it.
Right.
You know, there are a lot of very positive messages in Star Trek. And I choose to, you know, embrace those messages and help carry on, you know, the legacy of what made the original series so wonderful. And there are tons of people out there that feel the same way. And, you know, we don't have to agree on you know what, Zach, you and Justin and I'm quite sure we don't agree on several things. But hopefully we can still be friends. We can still, you know, respect each other and get along with each other. And to be honest with you guys, that was the biggest message of Star Trek.
Right.
The biggest message of Star Trek was that humanity has come together and overcome their petty differences and and unified as a human race. That's a good message, and I applaud that message and hope to continue it.
Well, that's yeah. Now my parents raised me on Star Trek, so I like to
awesome.
Think I'm
as did mine.
It taught me to be very tolerant.
Yeah, and a nerd.
Yeah, exactly. and a huge dork. Yeah,
exactly. Well, you're in good company.
Okay. Well, actually, I think that actually wraps us up. So, Vic, again, can't thank you enough for coming on the show. We really appreciate having you on.
Thank you guys so much for having me. I know we got into some deep stuff, and you know, at the end of the day, I love what I do. I love and am grateful to the fans for their support of my work. And hope to be able to continue doing what I do for many years to come. And thank you so much for everything that you guys do for the industry. It's much appreciated.
Okay, that's our show. Big thanks to Vic for stopping by. Theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us a rating or review. We'd really appreciate it. And we'll see you all next week.